All right. Well, today we wanted to focus on Psalm 139. So you can turn your Bibles to Psalm 139. And you can also use the mobile app to follow along with us. Search HMCC in the Google Play Store or the App Store. And there will be notes there. And you can follow along with us as we talk about what it means to know God and to be known by Him. I just wanted to start with a quick question or just a thought. Think just for a second in your mind, the person in your life that you know the best or that knows you the best, whether it's your best friend, someone in your family, and how long or how much time and effort did it take in order to get to know them to that level? Just think about it just for a second. And you're probably thinking about that friend that you grew up with in secondary school, or that sibling, or that family member that you have. As I was thinking about this, I realized the concept of knowing something or someone to that depth, we sometimes take it for granted, especially with our family members, right? We know all their quirks, we know all their habits. We're like, okay, I'd rather not know some of those things about my family. But we take it for granted. It just somehow happens. But we forget how much time, energy, and investment it took to get to that point where we really understood or we knew that person to that level. And so knowing that person, it might seem natural to us, but I want to propose that it wasn't always that intuitive. It wasn't always that natural from when we were young. Like, for example, babies, they seem to have a natural sense for who their parents are compared to other strangers. Right, I myself, especially when I hold a baby, it's really awkward. I hold them like this, and they start crying like crazy. And they know that I'm not their parent. It's very, very clear. But there's something about baby; they know who's their mom or who's their dad, and who is not their mom or dad. And they just kind of intuitively have this understanding because whether it's they just spent a lot of time with them or what it might be. But the question is, do babies really, really know the difference? Even if their parent has a twin, an identical twin, are babies able to tell the difference between someone who is their parent or their parent's identical twin? With the same exact genes, same exact look, same exact everything else. And so what I wanted to do was just show a quick video about these parents who are very cruel to their little kids. The parents have an identical twin, and as they're holding the child, they introduce their child for the first time to their identical twin. And I just want to use this as an illustration for how we get to know people. So let's watch this video together. All right. I feel bad for those kids. They're going to be scarred for life afterward. And their parents are like, who's the real parent? The point is, when we're thinking about knowing someone, it's oftentimes not as easy as we think about. I hope when these kids grow up, they're going to know who their parents are, right? After you spend a lot of time, maybe when they're young, they're like confused, like that last baby, like, what, who's my real dad? But when you grow up and after you get to know someone, then it's pretty obvious who's your dad or who's not your dad. Now, some of us, we know identical twins, we have friends. And when you first meet an identical twin, you're like, who's who? And you start calling the person by the wrong name. I do that all the time. But then after you get to know them for some time, then it's really easy to pick out the differences. Then it becomes really simple. You notice little things, little quirks, little different attitudes that make it very clear who's who. And so the question is, how many of us were able to know and distinguish God in every single little detail and trait and characteristic and who He is? As we know Him, we're able to run to Him and cherish Him just like that. Just like a child that knows their parents so well in a crowd of so many strangers. Just like you and your parents and your family, even if your parents had an identical twin, you would probably know which one is your parent or which one is your mom or your dad. And so today we want to talk about how many of us we really know God, and how many of us we actually know that God knows us in that specific and detailed way. And that's why the one thing is that when we get to know the God who knows us, we will want to make Him known. When we get to know the God who knows us, we will want to make him known. I want to talk about 2 points through Psalm 139 about how God knows us, and hopefully you've turned to that. So the first point is that we have to understand our God knows us. Our God knows us deeply, through and through, in deep and intimate ways. So let's start reading verse 1 to 6, Psalm 139. It says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. As we look into the psalm, the first section of the psalm is broken up into 3 parts, and he talks about there are 3 different aspects of how God knows us. 3 different aspects, and I'm going to go through each one. And one thing that I'm going to do in each of these sections is that I'm going to notice patterns and related words that the psalmist uses to describe how God knows him or how God understands him. And that's how we're going to see how God knows us. And this first subpoint is that God fully understands us. He fully understands all aspects of who we are. One other way to say this is God is omniscient. He's all-knowing everything. So when we look at these first 6 verses, in each of these sections, or each of these verses, there's a pattern that we notice. There's a pattern. It starts with you, there's a verb, and then there's a direct object. So we're going back to English grammar class, right? You, a verb, and then there's a direct object, which is I or my, something about the psalmist, his person, or something that about himself. And that's repeated 5 times throughout these first 6 verses. And once we understand the structure, that's going to help us to understand what the psalmist is trying to emphasize more through this passage. The first emphasis is, we're going to go word by word. We're going to start with you, then we're going to go to the verb, and then we're going to go to the I or my section. The first stress is God is the focus. God is the initiator. God is the one who's first. The gospel is that God was first, not us. I think sometimes we mistake the gospel for something about just God loves us so much and the focus is so much on us, but we have to know that the focus is on God. And if God is fully understanding, then it has to start with God first and foremost. And we have to get that right. So that's the first stress, that starts with God. The second stress is now, what is it that God does? And so we look into these verses, and after the first part, where it's always, you know, God, the psalmist is saying, you, you, and you. What does God do? There are a couple of words that he uses. For example, know, discern, search, hem, in other translations, acquainted, enclose, and lay. Where he's, you know, laying his hand upon the psalmist. This is what God does. He knows us. He discerns. He searches us out. He hems us in. They're all words of understanding, seeking, pursuing after. And what's the third stress? The third aspect is now, what does God understand? If the focus is on God, God is the initiator, and what does he do? He understands, he deeply understands us. Then what does he understand? He understands our thoughts. He understands how we sit down, how we rise up. He understands our path. He understands our lying down. He understands all our ways. Before a word is on our tongue, he knows it. He understands it. I want to read verse 2 in the Amplified. It says, you know when I sit down and when I rise up, my entire life, everything I do, you understand my thought from afar. Everything that we do, that we think, that we say, God understands that. In a deep, intimate way. Some of us, when we think about God understanding or knowing, like where we sit or where we rise or where we are physically, sometimes we're like, that's not too hard. For some of us students, we're like, I know where my friend is. For CHK students, they're always in the university library or always in Wuhoman Learning Commons. You're always there. No, 24/7, you know who you are, right? No matter what morning, after lunch, you go there and you study. Or for UST students, you know, some students, you're always in the LC, always in the learning commons, 24/7, and you're not studying, you're just watching YouTube videos. That's what you're really doing. Poly students, I don't know where you're always in Hangam Hall, right? Sunday morning, you wake up, you come down, you're like, I'm here, right? HKU students, I don't know where you guys are. So some of us are like, oh, you know, it's easy to know where we're at. Of course, you know, it's physical location, but God knows us in such deeper ways. It's not just where we're at. It's not just about what our habits are. It's not just about what our routine is day to day. But he understands our physical presence, our mental status, our intent, even the thoughts that we have before we think it. He knows it. For some of us, this might be a really frightening thought. For some of us, it's like, okay, you know, God knows like all my good intentions. He knows all my thoughts. But does he also know all the bad things about me too? Does he also know all my fears, all my anxieties, all my insecurities? Sometimes we don't want people to know those things. And we're afraid of being known. That's why some of us, we put up a front. We try to be someone we're not. In life group, don't raise your hand. How many of you've experienced this when your life group leader says, hey, let's go around and share our most embarrassing moment. And then everyone is silent. No one wants to share. Or how many of us, you know, your life group's like, you know, who wants to share something vulnerable, deep? Or you're sitting in LCG and that person shares something deep and you're like, I don't want to share anything deep. I don't want to respond or I don't want to reciprocate because I'm afraid if that person knows about me intimately, deeply, they could use that against me. We're afraid that if someone knows every aspect about our lives, what we've gone through, that past situation in secondary school that we're too ashamed to tell anyone about, hurts that we've gone through before, that we feel like if someone knew our past or our history, then they would look at us in a totally different way. They wouldn't want to associate with us anymore. There's so many things that we fear: exposure, shame, past sins, old habits, things that we're anxious about, that we want to keep. We want to keep arm's length away from people because we're afraid that they won't accept us. We're afraid that they won't love us anymore. We're afraid that they won't hang out with us anymore. But this is the thing. God already knows all of us and every single thing that we've done. Every mistake that we've made, every weakness that we have, every sin that we've committed, every shameful thing that we've ever done or that's been done to us, he knows it all. And it's only when you find someone that knows you deeply and intimately and loves you that we're able to find just peace and joy and hope in light of those things. Tim Keller says this really well in this quote. He says, to be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. To be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. Just want to stop there. There's a lot of people who we know that, you know, love us a lot, and we come into life for the first time, we're like, wow, they're so loving. They care about me a lot. But that love only goes to a certain depth if we're not willing to share deeply about our lives. Because we're just presenting the best side of us. But if that person loves you and knows everything about you, that means that love is so deep, so much deeper, and so much greater. And I want to challenge some of us, we're afraid of sharing things with our life group or their LCGs. You're never going to experience the depth of God's love unless you're willing to share that with someone else. Continue on. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear. But to be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense, humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us. How many of us we've experienced this kind of love? How many of us we've been totally open and transparent with our lives? Because we understand a God who knows every single aspect of us. And even though he knows every single aspect of us, from the very good to the very bad, he still loves us. He still cares for us. That is a God that we want to know. That is a God that fully understands. He fully understands. The second sub-point is that not only he fully understands, but God is fully present. God is fully present. So not only is he omniscient, all-knowing, but God is also omnipresent. He is everywhere, in all places. Let's continue on and read verses 7 to 12. That's what it says. Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. Again, we're going to look at different things that are related or repeated. So here, verses 7 to 12, if I is repeated three different times. It gives three different situations or hypothetical scenarios of places that he can go that he's wondering if God is there or not. So the three different places, heaven versus Sheol. Sheol is another word for, you know, the underworld or hell. Second one is wings of the morning versus a remote sea. Third is darkness and night versus light and day. The question is, why does he give these examples? Why does he give these extreme cases or scenarios? Is it true that God is only in heaven, or God is really only in that place, or is he really only in wings in the morning or the remote sea? Well, what the psalmist is really trying to say is, not only these extreme places, but everything in between. God is everywhere in between. If heaven is the highest place and Sheol is the lowest place, God is everywhere in between. If God is in the air, wings of the morning, versus, and he's also in the deepest depths of the sea, he's everywhere in between that we have. If he's in darkness, if he's there, present there, even if we think it's darkness, versus the light of day, then he's everywhere in between. There's nowhere that we can escape from him. And I want to focus on verse 7, where it says, where shall I go from your spirit, or where shall I flee from your presence? This is the key question that sets up the whole passage. I want to read it in three different translations, just those words where he's saying flee or running away. The NLT translates it into escape or get away. The Message says avoid. The New Century Version says run from. And the question is, how many of us we've wanted to escape, run away, avoid, whether it's God or other people or situations in our lives? How many of us, there are so many situations in our lives that we're just like, God, you're not in this situation and I can't stand it anymore. And I was just thinking about this. I was thinking about little children when you're playing peekaboo with them. Like babies, it's a lot of fun because you can just go like this, peekaboo, and then like somehow they're entertained because like when you're like this, you disappear, but when you're like this, you appear suddenly, right? So to the child, you're gone, right? But then for you, you're like, oh, I'm here the whole time. And it's like, okay, we're doing this over and over again. I can only do this so many times. And I'm just like, oh my God, Lord, help me to love children. Or with toddlers, right? Toddlers are a little bit more interactive. They can at least run around. Like with babies, you just sit there. But with toddlers, sometimes there's like a big wall in the middle, and like you're on two sides of the wall, and you're like, you're going on one side, and you're like, oh, I see you. And then you run to the other side, and I see you. And the toddler kind of has no idea that you can run around to the other side of the wall and catch them on the other side. And to the toddler, it's like, wow, how can the person be at all places at once? And then in your mind, you're like, no, I'm just going around. You know, I'm just here. And I'm wondering if God sometimes sees us like that. Like, we are so amazed that somehow God could be in every single situation, every aspect of our lives, but we just don't see him. And God is like, it's simple. I'm everywhere. I remember there was a time when I had just finished my college degree, graduated, and I just started working. This was after I did missions, missions project. I was on this missions high. I was so excited for God. I was like, God, I'm going to do all these things. Of course, I overcommitted myself. I had such high expectations for myself. I failed in everything. Literally everything I committed to, I failed in everything that I wanted to do. And that semester was, I kid you not, the hardest semester of my life. The hardest, like, 4 months of my life, still to this day. For a couple of reasons. Number one, not only did I fail all the commitments that I made during missions, but second thing, I started a new job. That was the first time I started working. And just the transition of working life was really, really difficult for me. And I started to get very depressed. And my coworkers started questioning me and asking me, like, if I was really wanting to work at this place because I just didn't feel natural. I didn't feel like I could do the job well. And I slowly started to sink into this, like, I don't know if I was, like, really depressed, like, clinically, I never saw a doctor, but I just had all these really dark thoughts in my mind because nothing in my life was going well. My church life wasn't going well. I felt like I couldn't really seek God. Work wasn't going well. And so in my mind, I was like, God, if nothing in my mind is going well, if I can't do good at anything, then what's the meaning of life? What's the purpose of why I'm here? And I started to have really, really dark thoughts. I started to really ask myself, like, what's the point of living? I had, you know, borderline suicidal thoughts during those times. And I was asking God, like, where are you? God, what are you doing? And that was a time where I tried to solve it by praying more. I tried to pray as long as I could, but the more I prayed, the more I felt like, God, where are you? You're not answering me. And I got to this point where I started having these thoughts about running away. I think some of you who have thought this, you might be able to understand, but for those of you who have never experienced this, just try to understand. There's a point where, like, everything was going so badly, I started having this thought of, what if I just, like, one day packed up everything, left, started driving. This is back in the U.S. So in the U.S., I'm in Michigan. Michigan is kind of like in the middle of the United States. And I was like, what if I just started driving west to the middle of nowhere where no one could find me? Like, around cornfields, no reception, and no one could call me or anything like that. Because, like, the middle of America is, like, all cornfields and things like that. I was like, what if I just decided one day I'll just pack up and leave? And what I really wanted to do was I wanted to pack up and leave. And then what I wanted to do was I wanted to go into my apartment, go to my workplace, go to the church. I wanted to install all these little, like, remote, you know, they have those home automation things now. You can install cameras all over the place. And then you can, like, on your phone, you can, like, watch the cameras and you can see what happens in those cameras. I wanted to run away and then put cameras in all the spots that I normally would go to. And I wanted to see who would look for me. I wanted to see who would miss me. I wanted to see who would be wondering where I went, trying to find out what happened. And I realized this desire to escape, but at the same time, this desire to be known, to be cared for, to be loved, was so deep in my heart because I felt so lost. I felt so empty. I felt like I just wanted to run away from all the problems that I had. I didn't end up running away, thank God. But it's a long story, but toward the end of that semester, I think the thing that really got me back on my feet was at a conference I was at the very last session. I think God really met me at that session. And I think the main thing that God showed me that really helped me to reconnect and be like, wow, God is still there, was God showing me that He's been there all along, through all the situations, through all the difficulties, through all the hardships that I had been through. And every single one of those difficulties and hardships, He was present, and He was there, and He didn't let me go. And actually, those difficulties and hardships that I went through were actually there to help me to grow and help me to know His love was present that much more. And I just share that story because I'm wondering, I know for some of us, whether it's, thoughts of suicide, thoughts of mental problems, secrets that we're too afraid of sharing with anyone, There's so many situations we're just trying to run away from. There's so many areas of our lives that we're constantly just trying to get away. We want to run away from our family because our family is causing us so many problems. We want to run away from our responsibilities. Sometimes our responsibilities, whether it's from work or even from church or even from other friends, we're just like, we can't handle it. God, I can't handle it anymore. Take this away. Sometimes we're running away from ourselves because we're so upset with who we are and we're like, God, I can't believe I'm like this. And I'm wondering what those situations that we are in that we're trying to run away or escape from. But in those situations, God is always there. We can never run away from God. He's always there. He's always present. And he's always there to take care of us. We might not see it in this moment. But sometime down the road, we'll look back and we're like, wow, God, you've always been there the whole time. You've been taking care of me this whole time. I just didn't see it. I just didn't know it. So for some of us, I want to challenge us. What are those situations that we want to escape from? What are those situations that we're not sure what God is doing? And it takes some faith to believe that God is still with us. It takes some faith to believe that he's still present. So not only does God fully understand, not only is he fully present, but God formed us. God formed us. He's omnipotent. He's all-powerful. When we think about God's omnipotence or how powerful he is, we usually think about, wow, God is like creator of the universe. He's so big. But how many of us, we thought about God's power in the microscopic details of how he formed us, how he created us? Now, the psalmist talks about this in verse 13 to 16, so let's read it. It says, "For you formed me, for you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret. Intricately woven in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there were none of them." So again, we're going to look at words that are related here. So what did God do? He formed, he knitted, he made. He talks about our frame. We were woven. So God wove us. And we start to see a pattern or theme with these words. The pattern or theme is this idea of textiles, of fabric, of clothing. In the Amplified Version, in verse 15, it says, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was being formed in secret and intricately and skillfully formed as if embroidered with many colors in the depths of the earth." Intricately and skillfully formed as if embroidered. There's this aspect of like this beautiful like piece of clothing that this person, you know, that God has created, and all the details are there. And to be honest, for me, I'm like, okay, I don't understand. Because I don't like clothing, number one. Or I like comfortable clothing. I don't care about all the designs. Some of you are like, oh, I know all about that, right? You know, like you look at a piece of clothing, you see every detail, like, wow, this is so amazing, right? I want to buy this piece of cloth. For me, it's like just a piece of cloth, okay? Just a color, just a pattern, and then you just wear it, okay? And you just wash it. And then, you know, you go through the t-shirts and you just pick the top one and that's the one that you wear. I'm like, clothing, so what? But this is something that was actually really important in the Old Testament. If we think back to Leviticus, this is like the hardest book to read. But also when you look at the book of Leviticus and Numbers, it describes the type of clothing that the priesthood would wear when they would have to do their priestly duties or when they enter the tabernacle. So I wanted to show a photo of some of the priest's clothing. It's that main thought is called an ephod, and it was, if you read the book of Leviticus, it's like so many details. And it's like the thing should be woven this way with this color, and then you have to put 9 gems on it, and then each gem like means something or is according to something else. And normally when you read it, you're like, oh my God, like, when will this be over? I don't care what the priest wears. But then when you think about, wow, God has formed us, he created us, he woven us, And you think about, wow, in the Old Testament, this is kind of what they were picturing. This beautiful robe that had so much detail and so much purpose. You start to realize, wow, God had that much detail and purpose for us when he created us. Now you're like, oh, I want to go back to Leviticus. Let me read it. It's all about me. You got it a little bit too late. Yeah, how many of us, we realize that the attention and detail by which God created and formed us is so specific and so purposeful and so intentional that every single thing that we go through, who we are, our characteristics, our likes, our dislikes, it was intentionally created by God. But this is the sad part. Many of us, we feel like God made a mistake. Many of us, we feel like, oh, the way that God created me, I can't stand it. I hate it. Some of us, like, this mole on my cheek, God, why couldn't you have, like, created me without it? This birthmark that I have. Some of us were so obsessed with how we physically look. And not just ladies, but men too. We're like, God, why did you do this to me? Some of us, we look at those, you know, in every group of friends, there's always that really skinny guy who, like, he can eat so much. He can eat whatever he wants, and he never, ever gains weight. And you're like, come on, God, like, why couldn't you create me like that? And we do all these diets, we watch what we eat, we put on these beauty products. And what we're really saying is like, God, I don't believe you created me to be beautiful. And we look at all the posters, especially in Hong Kong, there's so much media that constantly tells us what we ought to look like. But God doesn't see us that way. He formed us. He created, he wove us in our mother's womb. And we are beautiful to him, just as we are. And if we're to think that somehow that we're not beautiful enough or pretty enough or good enough, then we haven't seen how God sees us or how he created us. Our struggles are not limited just to physical appearance. Sometimes it's that inward or internal struggle that we have. That thing that we were born with, whether it's, you know, how we speak or how we think. Or we're like, God, why did you put me in the family that I have? Like, why aren't I smart enough? Why do I struggle with this issue? Mental, physical, emotional. Why is it so hard for me to make friends? Why do I have so many relational issues? And we start to blame God. And this is where we start to play the victim. And if you ever catch yourself saying, if only I was fill in the blank, then we have to start realizing that we're playing the victim and we're saying, God, you didn't create me well enough. If only I was taller. If only I was smarter. If only I was stronger. If only I was born in this family. If only I was born in that country. And what we're really saying is, God, you didn't know well enough. You didn't know what you were doing. And we always see all the negative traits. And we always see all the faults, all the things that we could improve. But what we don't see is God's purpose and intention in creating us in the way that he designed us and he created us. That quirk that we have, it was God. That weakness that we have, it was God. That ability, that potential that we have. What if we started thinking, God, wow, this weakness that I have, God, you can use it to glorify you more. The struggle that I have, you can use it so that I can empathize and I can share that struggle with someone else. You can fill in the blank with so many different things. God formed us and he created us. He made every single thing for a purpose. And something that we say in our church so often is that our greatest misery will become our greatest ministry. If we really believe that, then I really believe that we're going to live totally different lives. We start to see that all the things that we feel inadequate or insufficient in, God created us for a purpose and with intention because he loves us and because he loves his people. Isaiah 43, 1-3a in the New Living Translation, it says, "But now, O Jacob, listen to the Lord who created you. O Israel, the one who formed you says, 'Do not be afraid, for I have ransomed you. I have called you by name. You are mine.'" And even if we can't see any meaning, if we don't see any purpose or any intention in what God has done or why he's created us that way, what we know is we're his. We're his beloved children, his sons and his daughters. And that will allow us to trust in him and allow us to know that he is good. How about us? What areas of our lives are we afraid of being exposed or afraid of being known in? Where are we trying to hide? Where are we trying to play the victim? We're blaming others. We're saying, if only I was this. And do we see how God, or can we get to know this God who is all-knowing, all-powerful, all-present in every area of our lives? If we know those things, then as we get to know how our God knows us, then we're going to really be able to live different lives. So not only does our God know us, but the second point I want to talk about is how our God ought to be known. Not only does our God know us in deep and intricate ways, but our God ought to be known. And we ought to make him known. Let's read verses 17 and 18 and continue on. It says, "How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I am still with you." When we read verse 17, we notice it kind of relates back to verse 6 that we read earlier. How vast God's knowledge is, how amazing he is. I'll read it, verse 6 again in the New Living Translation. It says, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too great for me to understand." It's too great. It's too amazing. I'm like amazed. It's like, wow. Verse 18 in the New Living Translation, I'll read it. It says, "I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand. And when I wake up, you're still with me." And we start to get to see the psalmist, his attitude. He is like amazed beyond belief. He's like, oh my God. Wow. When's the last time we're like, wow? We're just like in awe of who God is. And being so much in awe causes us to want to share about who God is with someone else. Don't raise your hand. How many of us, after we saw Avengers, you were like, oh, all of you should watch Avengers. And you're like, oh, yeah, that was me. Or we ate that restaurant, and you're like, oh, my God, it was so good. So good. You have to try it. Right? It's just natural. When we say when we know something to be so good and we're so amazed, we want others to experience it. Except one case. Except if that thing is scarce. If that thing that we've experienced is so good and there's only a little bit of it, then we're not going to want to share it. We're going to want to keep it for ourselves. How many of you like Jollibees? Love Jollibees? You swear by Jollibees? our missions team before we left for the missions field, I think this was literally the week before we left. We had like intensive training, and before we had intensive training, we're like, "Let's go eat Jollibees. You know, it's so good. And like, it's better than KFC. Just try it." I've never had Jollibees before, and so I was enjoying it. And we got a bucket of chicken to share. And they're like, "You have to try it. It's so, wow, it's so good," you know? I was like, okay, like, I wonder what all the hype is about. And so we were sharing. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And we're eating. And then the problem with the bucket of chicken was that, you know, like, when you order a bucket of chicken, it's not like you can order, like, exactly the amount of chicken that as you have people, right? You know how that's a big problem? We should like do something about it, right? You should be able to order customized number pieces of chicken to exactly how many people you have, right? We'll change the world. We'll start a new business. But so I forgot how many people we had, but I think there were like one extra piece of chicken compared to how many people there were. And you know what that happens, right? You're like, there's that one last piece of chicken. It's like everyone's finished eating their own chicken and everyone looks at that last chicken. You're like, you know what? And no one's saying anything, but everyone is thinking the same thing. Everyone's thinking the same thing, right? And this is what happens. Like when there's like food that you want, or when there's like that one last thing, then, you know, this is some typical things that people will say. And honest confession, these are things that I say. Okay? So when there's that food that you really want, something that people will say, hungry people, not me, say like, oh, what is that? Not like, can I have some? Like, oh, what is that? And the after person is like, oh, can I get some? Or someone, you know, this is the really deceptive way, right? If you want someone else's food and you still have some food left, you're like, oh, you want to try some of mine? And after that person, you know, tries some of you're like, hey, you know, come on, you gotta let me have some of yours, right? Okay, don't use any of these. I'm just letting you in on some of my secrets. Or some of us are like, you know, you see someone who's like almost about to finish their meal, or they're not really eating that much anymore, and you're like, are you gonna finish that? Are you gonna eat all of that? And they're like, no, please, 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 have some. These are the worst things. And I kid you not, this happened on the missions field when there was just like one or two pieces of food left, right? Do we have that photo of the remaining piece of food? Oh, so this is the big bucket. Is there another one with less food? No, okay. So, like, just imagine that bucket of chicken, right? And it's not full. Now, these are the side note, these are so deceiving, right? Because you order it thinking that the bucket is going to be overflowing with chicken, and when you get it, it's like halfway full. It's like the worst, right? It's so frustrating. And then when most people eat it, just imagine that bucket of chicken, there's just like one piece left, right? And then everyone knows that there's just one piece left, and then that one person, do you know what they say? Is anyone still hungry? And you're just like, you're hungry, right? Why don't you just say it? Just a sly, passive-aggressive way of saying, can I have it, right? Or this is the extra sly version. And this person goes, and this happened. So we called that person out the first time for saying, you know, is anyone still hungry? And then so the person got smarter, so they said something different. The next time there was something left over, they were like, oh, does anyone want the last piece? You're like, you do, all right? You want it. And it's so true. Like, when something is so scarce, like, it's so easy not to want to share, right? We just want it for ourselves, and we'll do whatever we can just to get that one piece for ourselves, even if it means we're a little bit passive-aggressive about it. But that's only the case when something is scarce. But when something is abundant, then we're totally okay with sharing it with as many people as we want. If something is so good and there's so much of it to go around, then it's just natural for us to want to give it to other people, right? Like some of us, we've been to Shake Shack recently. We're like, Shake Shack is so good, right? And you're not like, don't go to Shake Shack. It's only mine, you know? Shake Shack is for me only. No, you're not like that because Shake Shack, they can make more Shake Shack burgers, right? In theory, it's unlimited. So you don't have to worry about like, oh, it's just my Shake Shack. Or watching movies, right? After you watch a really good movie, it's not like the movie only plays once and you're the only one who could watch it, right? But you know, they can go to so many theaters in Hong Kong and watch the same movie that you did. And so I'm wondering, for us, how many times do we experience God? And we know that God is infinite. He has infinite amount of Him to go around to every single person. His love is infinite. His character is infinite in terms of, you know, it's for every single person. But we don't share it with other people. And there can only be a couple conclusions. It's either, A, we've never experienced Him in that deep way where we realize, wow, He is so good. Or we're just selfish about experiencing Him. And we want Him just for ourselves. And so I want to challenge us. When's the last time when we experienced God in such a deep and a powerful way? Think back to the last retreat that you went to, the last conference, that was this natural feeling of like, God, I want to share. I want others to know. I want them to know how amazing you are. Like, wow, you are so amazing, God. And I want someone else to be like, wow. When's the last time we felt that? We experienced that. We're like, God, I want someone else to know who you are. The psalmist, he actually responds in a different way. He responds in a totally different way. And I think it will give us some insight on how we want to share. Let's continue on and read verses 19 to 24. It says, "Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. O men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malicious intent. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." All of a sudden, you know, we start to see just a totally different shift in language, topic, and tone. And again, we're going to look at the patterns here. So first pattern, characteristics of the people that the psalmist describes. He describes them as wicked, men of blood. He calls them enemies. He says, those who hate you, those who rise up against you. It's like, whoa, okay, what's going on here? And then his attitude toward the wicked, what does he say about them? He says, depart from me. He says, I hate them. I have this hatred to them. God, slay them. And so the first question is like, why would the psalmist do this? After he experiences like how good God is, why would he then start to condemn and criticize his enemies? Like, why wouldn't he say, you know, God, love them, care for them, you know, include them into your sheepfold? Maybe he's under persecution. Maybe he's being attacked. Or maybe he's like really proud, thinking like, oh, wow, I experienced God and I know him much better. And you guys are like horrible people. Right? But there's still some kind of disconnect. It's like if we're like praising and worshiping God and like, you know, you're like the Spirit is there and you're like, yes, Lord. Yes, God. Fire that employee that I hate. God is praised, you know. He's so good. That freeloader, get an F, you know, Lord, yes, amen. You know, there's like a disconnect, right? It's kind of like a little bit strange or weird. But as we look into it deeper, we'll be able to understand why he's able to do this as he's praising God. I want to read verse 20 in two different translations. In the Message version, it says, "All the men and women who belittle you, God, infatuated with cheap God imitations." So these people that he's calling wicked, they're worshiping other gods. Cheap God imitations, idols, fake gods. They don't worship the real God who is deserving of worship. They're worshiping false gods. They're turning away from God. They're saying, God, you're not worth being worshiped, even though you're so amazing. In the New Century Version, it says, "They say evil things about you. Your enemies use your name thoughtlessly." So it's not like they don't know God. They know God. But then they start saying all these things about God without thinking. They use his name thoughtlessly. They just throw it around like it's just cheap material, whatever. It's these people who are idol worshiping. They know God, but they don't give credit of who God is. I want to read just a quote from Charles Spurgeon from one of his sermons that helps tease out this idea a little bit more. He says, "To love all men with benevolence is our duty, but to love any wicked man with complacency would be a crime. To hate a man for his own sake or for any evil done to us would be wrong, but to hate a man because he is the foe of all goodness and the enemy of righteousness is nothing more nor less than an obligation. The more we love God, the more indignant shall we grow with those who refuse him their affection." Just repeat that last sentence again. The more we love God, the more indignant shall we grow with those who refuse him their attention. So what is he saying? Spurgeon is saying the more we see how good, how amazing God is, the more we understand his omnipotence, the more we understand his omniscience, the more we understand his omnipresent nature, just how amazing, how awesome he is. And then any person who does not recognize that or does not see it, even though they've tasted it before, then they're repugnant. It's like, how can you do that? How can you experience God in such a deep way and then turn away from him? How can you experience something so good and then reject it later? But this is what we do all the time. How many of us, we know God, we've experienced him in so many ways, but we disobey him time after time after time after time. We go to the same old sins, same old habits, same old issues that we struggle with. I wanted to share just a brief story of something we experienced on the missions field. We got to meet a couple different missionaries, and just as a side comment, like, part of the missions experience is not only just serving people, but it's gaining a heart and seeing what God is already doing in that place. And really being inspired by how God is already working and moving. And I want to encourage all of us, if you've never been on missions before, I want to challenge us to apply, not just because it's something that we have to do, but like, wow, your eyes really get to be open and you really see God in a new way when you see his work and the workers that are out there doing that. So I just want to encourage you with that. But we got to meet a good handful of missionaries who were based in that city, and it was really incredible hearing some of the stories that they had gone through, some of their personal testimonies of different things that they went through in order to get to where they were and to see all the testimonies that God did. There was one missionary who, he was actually a local Chinese person. He moved to the U.S. for university and graduate school and actually started working there for a little bit. It took him like many years, God constantly showing him closing doors and things like that, for him to finally realize like God wanted him back to the U.S. And so he made that sacrifice. He said, God, you know, I know that, you know, my family wants me to be in the U.S. I know there's so much more, quote unquote, opportunity, the American dream, all that kind of stuff. He's like, God, I want to obey you and come back. And we were like, you know, like, everyone's like, why would you do that? You know, you had this dream opportunity to make a life for yourself in the United States. And he said, yeah. He was like, I wanted to obey God. And he realized that there's so many people, his own people, who didn't know God, that he wanted them to experience it. Another couple who isn't local Chinese, but they are from the U.S. One of the guy, he's from another country, but they were doing really, really well with their lives. They had kids going to college. The wife was actually working at like a, you know, big company. And then as she was sharing with us, she was like, yeah, I was signing like $4 million deals. And we had, you know, really good life. But then she was like sharing how, she was like, yeah, but we felt like God calling us back at that particular time. Even if that meant they had to miss parts of their children's college experience. You know, in our minds, as we're listening to their stories as a team, we're like, why would you do that? You know, you give up so much just so that you could obey God or see what God is doing in this country. And then what they did at the end, this was all during like a training session that they were taking us through. And one of the stories they shared was how there was a couple. One of their main objectives is to reach unreached and unengaged people groups. People who have never ever heard the gospel before. People don't have any access to the gospel. Whether it's they don't have a church body that is in their people group. They don't have a Bible translated into their own language. And you could just tell, like, their hearts were so broken over these people who have no access to the gospel. And they were sharing a story of this young couple. The wife just had a baby. The wife was incredibly lonely, incredibly just lost and feeling a little bit hopeless. While the husband, he had to drive 2 hours back and forth to some of these people group villages because it was so inaccessible. And you're not allowed to live there as someone who's not part of that people group. And they're saying there's people willing to do that, even if it costs them their family life, even if it costs them, you know, conflicts, disruptions in their marriage. Even if that means they can't live the American dream that they would have been able to live, they're willing to do it because they've experienced God and they love God so much that they want someone else to experience this. And then, so after they shared all that training, like, you know, they were sharing these testimonies, and then they were like, they shared a video. It was like a really dramatic video. It was like one of those sermon jams with, you know, people from all different countries, and it was like John Piper preaching in the background, you know, sharing about like, you know, go to the nations and things like that. And after the video was done, the missionary just asked us to just share some of our thoughts, what we were feeling, what we had learned over the last few days of training. And our team started sharing, and one by one, like some of us, we started getting a little bit emotional. And I think what I felt and what some of our team members were sharing was, you know, God, we experience you every single day. You're with us every single day. You care for us every single day. Some of us, we've been on past missions projects before. We've heard similar stories before. But for whatever reason, no matter how much we've experienced, somehow we go back to our normal lives and we start complaining. We start judging. We start getting insecure and afraid, consumed with ourselves. We start like complaining, like, God, like, why did you bring me to Hong Kong to this like tiny apartment? I can like barely move around. Some of us are like, God, why did you bring me here just to, you know, work at a job that I hate? My boss is so like annoying and angry all the time, and I can never meet their expectation. God, why did you bring me to a university that wasn't my first choice? And it's just so hard to get the grade that I want. And there's so much competition, and there's so many, you know, divisions between different groups of people. And we get so caught up in our little world. We get so caught up with our situations, with our lives. And we forget about who God is and how great He is. And that the most precious thing in our lives is knowing Him and how great He is. There's nothing else that matters more than that. And as we were sharing, we started realizing, confessing that, God, yeah, we've been consumed with ourselves. We've been so consumed with our daily lives that we don't even see, God, how many people don't even get a glimpse or a taste of who you are. They end up dying without ever knowing the real living God. And I think it just started to break our hearts. Just we had to confess and repent. The main point is that this Christian life, this gospel message, God being so good. I know some of us, we love Psalm 139. Psalm 139 is my psalm. You know, when I need to feel better, God, you know, you made me in my mother's womb. I feel so good. You know, you knew me, you formed me. But this psalm is not about you. This psalm is about who God is. His omnipotence, His omnipresence, and His power, and His omniscience, and how great God is. And if we understand how great God is, that will cause us to want to live in line with who He is. His commandments, we will want to obey Him, and we will want to share with Him, share about Him to other people, as many people as we possibly can. And if we somehow think that it's all about us, then we've totally missed the point. Yes, God knows us. He cherishes us. We're His children. But He does it because He wants other people to know about how great He is. Because there's so many people who have not experienced His love. I just want to read 23 and 24 again, because the psalmist kind of closes out with this gospel sentiment. This is the good news. It says, "Search me, O God, know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. See if there be any grievous way in me. Lead me in the way everlasting." The psalmist really understands the gospel. He understands. It's not like, if you read this sentence by itself, it's like, okay, God, he's asking God to search him. But if you remember from the very first verse, what did the psalmist say? The psalmist said, "You have searched me and known me. You know everything about me." So he's not saying like, God, you need to know more about me. What the psalmist is saying is, God, I know there might be areas in my life that are not pure. I know there might be areas in my life where I'm not put together. I know there might be areas in my life where I'm afraid, I'm fearful, I'm not worshiping you, I'm not giving you credit for who you are. I'm not giving you the praise that you deserve. But Lord, reveal those things to me. So see if there be any grievous way in me. See if there's any wrongs in my life, in my heart. Expose it and lead me in the way everlasting. Lead me in the good way that you want me to go. Help me to live the good life that you want me to live. Not because I can, not because I'm able, but because of who you are, God, and what you did on the cross, you're able to change my heart. You're able to change my heart that is hardened, is rock solid, to a soft and willing heart to do what it is that you want me to do. And that's only possible if we understand who Jesus Christ is. If we understand, wow, how much Jesus Christ loved us by dying on the cross for us, even though we didn't deserve any of it, that will soften our hearts, allow us to come to him. Hebrews 10:19 in the New Living Translation, it says, "And so, dear brothers and sisters, we can boldly enter heaven's most holy place because of the blood of Jesus. By his death, Jesus opened a new and life-giving way through the curtain into the most holy place. And since we have a great high priest who rules over God's house, let us go right into the presence of God with sincere hearts, fully trusting him. For our guilty consciences have been sprinkled with Christ's blood to make us clean, and our bodies have been washed with pure water." And so the author's encouraged, dear brothers and sisters, we can enter into God's presence. We can say, God, search me, know me, reveal who I am to myself, because I don't even know who I am myself. I don't even know how good you are to me. But I know I have confidence that I can come in and not be ashamed. I have confidence that I am loved. I have confidence that I am welcomed and accepted by this God who's so big and so amazing because of the blood of Christ. And as I enter in, then I can be free to worship. I can be free to share about who this God is with as many people as I possibly can. And if we understand that, then we're going to know how good God is. If we understand that, then we're going to be so encouraged. We're going to just naturally, it's going to come out of us. We're not going to have to pull teeth. We're not going to have to like force ourselves or be obligated to do all these things. And that's why the one thing is, when we get to know the God who knows us, we will want to make him known. When we get to know the God who knows us, we will want to make him known. I'm going to give us some next steps to give us some practical ways for us to get to know God. First one is just spend time worshiping and meditating on God. Just spend time worshiping and meditating on God. You know, we've been going through this playlist series and we've been giving, you know, different songs, and it's been awesome hearing that the playlist has been a blessing to some of us. But I can't help but feel like after a certain amount of time, it just becomes background music. We just treat it like, you know, coffee shop music. We just put it on while we're working. Like, oh yeah, you know, this is great. But some of the reasons why some of these songs are so good is because what? It's because it talks about the character of God. It talks about who God is. It talks about who we are in light of who God is. And I want to challenge us this week, when you're listening to that playlist, instead of just like putting on a background music and just kind of, you know, going about your day-to-day business, like actually focus on the words. Actually think about the words. And as you're thinking about it, like actually internalize and meditate. I'm like, wow, God, you know, you have created me. You do love me. This reckless love, it's reckless. Which is a whole controversy in itself. You know, you don't have to sing it out loud. You don't be like weird, like, you know, should I sing it out loud on the MTR? Everyone's gonna like look at me weird. You don't have to do that. But just internalize it in your mind when you're listening to the song. Just actually listen to it, pay attention to it. And as you're listening to it, actually worship. Actually worship in your heart. I really believe that that's gonna help us to connect and understand who God is and his character. Second one, share something you're afraid of or hiding to a trusted friend. This goes back to a lot of us, we're afraid of being known. We're afraid of different things in our lives, our past, that we don't want others to find out about. And yes, God already knows everything that we've done. We can always share with Him. And that's hopefully something that's very reassuring and encouraging to us. But there's something about sharing it with someone else who you trust, who you know that loves you very much, and who you know is able to give you good biblical counsel and advice. There's something about sharing that with them. And as you share that with them and they receive you, they accept you, they encourage you, they exhort you, they point you back to the gospel, there's something about being known in biblical community that will help you to understand God's love in a tangible way. Because if you keep it secret, you can say God knows all you want, but you don't actually trust that He knows you and He accepts you until you're able to openly share about with other people. And I want to challenge some of us, if there are deep things, whether it's your LCG this week, or you have accountability in some other contexts, I just want to encourage you, share some of those things that are so difficult. Not just for the sake of it, but because you really want to experience being known by God and experiencing His love in a deeper way. Lastly, in light of wanting to make God known, I want to challenge us to list out 5 friends to share about who God is. This is something that we even kind of learned from the missionaries that were out there. Just go through your phone book, your contacts list. Just pray through it. Identify who are 5 people that you care about, that you love, who never ever heard of the amazing and great God that we worship and we serve. And make a commitment. Get accountability for it. That God, I want to tell that person about who you are and how amazing you are and how precious this good news is. I don't want to make any more excuses. Usually, like, when we're like, oh yeah, I'm going to try to reach out to people, pray for me, you know, like, I just want to try to be a good witness in the workplace. Like, what does that really mean? It just means, like, I'm just going to be a better person. Like, oh, I'm not going to, like, leave my coffee on the counter so that people don't get angry at me. Or I'm not going to take someone else's food anymore. Like, that's not being, like, a verbal witness to Jesus Christ. Amen? We have to verbally share about who God is and what Jesus did on the cross. That is what sharing the gospel is. It's not just about being a better person. Hopefully you are being a better person, right? If you're being a slob and then you're like, Jesus loves you, you're like, what? Like, who are you? You know, something doesn't match, right? But as we are living out as a good witness, we have to verbally share. And I want to challenge us to list out and pray for 5 people. That doesn't mean you have to do it all at once or this week. But just sometime in the next, you know, as God is leading you, as you're interacting with this person, hopefully God is saying, you know, I want you to be bold. I want you to share. And we should be able to do that in Hong Kong where, you know, there's so much freedom to be able to share. Where in other countries, they don't have the privilege of doing that freely and openly. Hopefully we're able to take advantage of that. Let's stand as we close. As we've been going through this series on playlists, I'm hoping and praying that it's been just good going through the Psalms, not just like other passages, because the Psalms is, you just see how intimate, you just see examples of people of old who really knew God and had these intimate relationships with God. You see their example, and you see how they know God. And it is like incredible, just the different aspects of characteristics of who God is that, you know, some of us were like, wow, I never knew that. Or maybe God, you know, I just didn't know it to that depth. And I'm wondering for how many of us, it's not like we didn't know that God was all-powerful. It's not like we didn't know that God was everywhere. It's not like we didn't know that God was all-knowing. But something about just getting lost in our day-to-day lives, we just forget. We get so consumed with work, studies, grades. That we totally like box God out. We put him in a corner of our lives. And we only see him and we only recognize him on a Sunday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday or Saturday. But what would it be like if we, the way that the psalmist knew God, what would it be like if we knew him, knew God, in that way every single day of our lives? What would it be like if we were so known and we were so confident and so unashamed that we could just be free? We didn't have to be ashamed or scared being ourselves, reaching out to our friends, our life group members, even our colleagues, our coworkers. What would that be like? So just want to encourage us, maybe just take a minute or two and just say, God, I want to get to know you in that way. Not just on Sunday, not just on Tuesday, I want to get to know you like that in every area of my life. And I don't want any of these other things to cause interference in my relationship with you. And you know what it is. You know what's blocking your relationship with God and you. Could be that future dream that you always want. Could be that relationship, could be that difficulty you're going through, could be that struggle, could be that physical whatever that you're like, God, why did you make me that way? Whatever it is, just confess that to God and say, God, I don't want that to hinder me from knowing you. I don't want that to hinder me from being known by you. Help me to know you in that deep way. Can we just do that just for the next 2 minutes or so? Let's just come to God. Let's just say, God, I want to know you in that way. Don't let anything else hinder me. Let's just pray together.